financial planning, and security can sometimes be seen as a moving target. The rules change constantly, and you need guidance to stay ahead of the market moves. This is the Labenthal Report with Michael Hartzman and Dominic Tavella. We'll break down the news, trends, and overall direction of the markets, telling you what may be coming next, investment opportunities, and what to avoid. Now, here are your hosts, Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman. Today is Tuesday, January 18th, 2022. And I'm on with always with my partner, Dominic Tavella. How are you, Dominic?
Good evening, Mike. Doing well. Everybody's safe and healthy so far. So we're grateful for that.
Good. We're both in our Long Island nests this evening, tucked away. And we both had the TV on most of the day, watching the market slip slide away. And I guess, Dom, fundamentals are out the window. Earnings are out the window. COVID's out the window. It's all about inflation right now, and it's all about interest rates right now.
Spot on, Mike. We looked at the markets the end of last week, and you know, going into a holiday weekend, a long holiday weekend, it's not unusual for the markets to pull back a little bit and people to kind of raise cash just in case something happens over the weekend that they didn't foresee. But boy, we came in today and it was a terror. The markets got, I don't like to use words that frighten people, but they got slammed pretty hard today. And it's all about interest rates going higher. And clearly the worries that the Fed intervention on interest rates might push the economy into a recession.
Which I honestly, and you and I talked about this, I really don't see that happening. I mean, recession is anywhere on the horizon. And furthermore, you know, we all seem to focus on the 10-year Treasury. Is there really billions upon billions of dollars rushing in to a 10-year note that's going to pay 1.85% in interest? So to your point, I really think it's all about the worry of long-term inflation. And yes, it might push us into a recession, Dom, but that's that remotely on the horizon right now.
Well, a lot of this is perception, right, Mike? So not just a few months ago, we were on this show, we were talking about how, you know, what does the word transitory mean with regard to inflation? The Fed arguing that this inflation is going to go away. It's not going to be as bad going forward. And our argument from day one was transitory does not mean 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months. It could mean as much as 3 years. And, you know, we had Dr. Siegel on who pointed that out right in the show that he had expectations for inflation to last years. Well, the Fed now has acknowledged that, this is not going to go away really quick. And in fact, their whole stance is to be much more aggressive in their money tightening process. And that, again, has spooked the markets. So they haven't done a thing yet, which is ironic. And to your point, Mike, they haven't done a thing yet, but the markets are reacting fearfully that they might do too much and make a mistake.
You know, the media loves the expression when it comes to the Fed. They talk about the punch bowl and how investors, I guess the punch bowl has spiked and the Fed is able to provide liquidity that makes everyone happy. So I guess the fear, Dom, is eventually the Fed's going to say enough and they're going to take the punch bowl away.
One of my favorite lines, and I think you've heard it about three times today, is when things are good, the markets perceive them as perhaps too good. And when things are bad, the markets perceive them as really potentially horrific. And that pendulum always seems to swing way too much. Oh, things are really great. And oh, my God, things are really bad. And I have a feeling this pendulum is going to swing too much on the things are going to be really bad. But couldn't agree with you more, Mike. I find it really hard to believe. They may not have a choice, but I find it hard to believe that the Fed intentionally is going to slam on these brakes and push the economy into a recession. So I think we're going to be okay, but we have a great guest tonight to help us solve that problem, I hope.
Yeah, we have John Eade, a returning guest, been on several times with us. He's the chairman of Argus Research. They're a partner of ours. And we're really hoping to get his insight on where he sees interest rates, inflation, and different sectors. But also, just to put things in context, because everyone is listening live, it's a dinner hour. The Nasdaq is only down 7%. The S&P is only down 4. Now, that's not pleasant, but at the moment, it's still not a disaster. I mean, you know, it's still within the framework of, yes, time to time, things get soft.
And Mike, those are year-to-date numbers. Some people go back and measure those, both those indices from their all-time highs. And so the NASDAQ is probably closer to 10% if we look back to the end of last year. The S&P a little bit more, maybe closer to 5%. But to your point, it's completely valid. These are not horrific numbers. We warn clients all the time, 10% corrections are kind of normal. And I do argue sometimes that could be beneficial if you prepare for them, if you set up the portfolios correctly. And this shouldn't be a shocker. Last week, we did our third liquidation in our portfolios, raising cash again. Last week, number three, it's only the 18th of the month, having cash at an all-time high for the year, and really trying to put the portfolios in a position of protecting downside risk. We'll see what happens, but we could take advantage of a really good dip here.
Yeah, well, look, it's always good to play defense. That's what they say in sports too, right? Defense wins championships.
And we saw this weekend for those teams that didn't play defense.
Exactly. Exactly.
Pummeled.
Exactly. Pummeled. So on that note, we will be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Are you paying federal taxes on your cash? I work hard for my money that I keep in cash. And for the life of me, I can't imagine why anyone would want to pay federal taxes on their cash. That's why I keep my cash in the Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. Symbol L-E-T-A-X. Le tax.
Rates on cash are already so low, why pay federal taxes on the interest your cash earns? Remember, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep. The Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund, LETAX, may help you earn more on the cash you've worked hard for and keep more after-tax dollars in your pocket. Find out more about the fund by speaking with a Lebenthal Global Advisors private wealth advisor or its sponsor at dcmadvisors.com.
For your hard-earned cash, why pay the tax when there's the tax?
Lebenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. It's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by calling 800-441-7031. Please read the prospectus carefully before you invest. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. There is no guarantee that this or any investing strategy will be successful. An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund carefully before investing. The fund is distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC, member FINRA. The fund may invest in municipal securities, the interest on which may be subject to federal alternative minimum tax. After the fund buys a security, the IRS may determine that a bond issued as tax-exempt should in fact be taxable. There is no affiliation between DCM Advisors, LLC, and Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC. DCM Advisors and Ultimus Fund Distributors are not affiliated with Lebenthal Financial Services, Inc. or Lebenthal Global Advisors, LLC.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Lebenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@lebenthal.com. Now, back to the Lebenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with Dominic Tavella. And our special guest this evening, John Eade, chairman of Argus Research. He's been on with us several times since we began the show. Good evening, John. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Michael. Happy New Year. Glad to be here tonight.
Good evening, John.
Hi, Dom.
Great to see you. Thanks for joining us tonight. We picked a great night to have you on. It was all planned. Michael intentionally made the market go down so we could pick your brain. So thanks for joining us.
Sounds good.
So, John, I have an economic question before I have a market question. If you could explain the correlation between when treasuries tend to tick up and the media seems to focus on the 10-year mostly lately, why when the 10-year treasury ticks up, the NASDAQ, you know, throws up. And you know, sorry, was that not supposed to do
very
that?
Very graphic, yeah.
Thank you.
But appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you. But all seriousness, what's the connection between the two, John?
Michael, I think there are a couple of links to consider with interest rates and the NASDAQ. First, let's just talk about the composition of the NASDAQ. And in general terms, there are a lot of tech stocks in the NASDAQ index. It's, I don't know if it's more than half tech stocks. It's probably close, if not half. Whereas with the Dow Jones Industrial Average, maybe it's more like 15 or 20%. And the thing about tech stocks is they tend to have high PE ratios because they are growth stocks. And growth stocks and interest rates, I'm sorry, PE ratios and interest rates are inversely correlated. So when interest rates decline, that gives PE ratios room to increase, which is what we saw for the past several years as interest rates went down, you know, below 1% at one time. That was great for PE ratios for tech stocks. But as interest rates move higher, then you get the reverse movement with PE ratios, and you see those PE ratios compress a little bit. So that's one factor. The second factor really gets back to some of the finance courses that you know you'll take in college when you're studying the net present value of future cash flows. And growth stocks are exciting to investors because they're expected to have substantial cash flows in the future. And to value those cash flows in present value terms, you use a discount rate. And that discount rate is lower when interest rates are lower. So the value of those profits are higher. And you know, you're excited about the higher profits. But when interest rates rise, your discount rates rise. And so when you discount those future cash flows back to net present value at higher rates, those profits are lower, and that's going to send valuations lower too. So a couple of factors there, Michael. One, the inverse relationship with the 10-year and PE ratios, and two, the impact of interest rates on discount rates for future cash flows.
So just a follow-up to that, that clearly are endowments, mutual fund portfolio managers, hedge fund managers, the average investor is not getting that deep into the weeds when they're making an investment decision. So are we seeing this volatility now because it's the larger investors who manage literally tens of billions of dollars who are reacting to interest rates literally in real time?
That's my guess. They're shifting their portfolios, you know, maybe at the margin. They've been buying growth stocks for the past 5 years. That's been a good buy for sure. But now with interest rates slightly higher, and they are higher for sure, but they're nowhere near the kinds of highs that I think can really you know, cause a lot of damage to an economy or corporate profits. But anyway, at the margin, these institutional investors are, you know, raising funds by selling the growth stocks and then looking to redeploy in some value areas that, you know, may have more promising prospects here. Maybe the banks with higher long-term interest rates or, you know, the energy stocks as oil prices move higher.
John, you mentioned NASDAQ in growth stocks, but not everything is created equal. And we think about growth stocks, certainly the Apple and the Googles of the world. But you also think of Zoom or Peloton or DocuSign. There's a big difference between these tech growth stocks. Talk about quality versus maybe more speculative growth.
Sure. So when we're looking at growth stocks, I mean, we're definitely looking for high levels of revenue growth. And then you also like to see some margin expansion contribute to earnings growth. And if the company is generating a lot of cash, then it will, you know, maybe buy back some shares with excess cash at the end of the quarter. So you've got three growth drivers, and you like to see those all working for a company like Apple. So it's selling more iPhones. It's benefiting from its ecosystem and keeping costs low, and it's using the cash to buy back stock. Whereas some of these newer stocks that are emerging into the growth area, they probably don't even have profits yet. So it's really just a top line growth you see. And then if you look deeper into the financial statements, sometimes they're not profitable, and sometimes their profits are their losses are even increasing because they're plowing so much of their revenue back into the operations. And that just pushes those future cash flows in the future farther off into the future. So we're looking for some quality signals in growth stocks that we like. High quality earnings with a lot of cash to buy back stock. Opportunities to improve margins, and yes, certainly that top line growth as well.
So to follow up to Dom's question, the FANG stocks get a lot of attention, and that's Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. So if they're the predictable companies, and Dom pointed out this morning on our broker call, Apple could probably raise the price of their iPhone by $200-$300. And people are going to line up for 24 hours waiting to buy it. So do the FANG stocks continue to shine when NASDAQ struggles? Or would you be worried about the FANG stocks now as well as interest rates are rising?
I think there would be degrees of sell-off in the NASDAQ. And it would be those lower quality tech stocks, without the real experienced management teams or the experience of going through these cycles in the past that would probably be hit harder. I mean, you look at a stock like Beyond Meat. That was a darling a year ago, and it's not quite a penny stock, but it's a small cap stock now. And you compare Beyond Meat to the FANG stocks, and the FANG stocks they benefit from what we call the network effect. When people hop onto Facebook, they're strengthening the network. They're strengthening the backbone of this company. And it's the same with Netflix, the information Netflix grabs when, you sign up to watch, what was the Squid Game show, right? They know all the demographics and they can use that with other initiatives that they've got going. Not so much with, a plant-based meat. It's just a patty that comes out and you buy it from the store. So I think the FANG stocks are going to be in better position because they benefit from the strength of their networks. And as long as those top lines are growing, those networks are going to continue to strengthen.
So John, Mike alluded to it early. You do get days like today where maybe the baby does get thrown out with the bathwater. Good quality names just are depressed, and it's just the overall mood of the market. Is there a buying opportunity at some point in these quality names? And when do you kind of pull the trigger, if you can help us with that?
So I think, one of the big uncertainties now is what is the Federal Reserve going to do, right? They've done two major programs in the past couple of years to try to support the economy. They've been buying back bonds, and then they've kept the short-term interest rates low. So they've slowed down their buyback program, and that's just about to come to an end. The Fed meets next week, so they're going to give us an update on where they are with that bond buying program. And they're also going to give a better signal of when they're going to start to raise interest rates. So I think there's more transparency coming from the Federal Reserve next week. My guess is the bond buying is over by February or March. They meet again in March. That's probably when they raise the rates for the first time, maybe 25 basis points. But as long as the market is seeing that and understanding that, And then at the same time, we start to get maybe a little bit of slowdown in some of these monthly inflation reports. I think that's going to be a good time to be owning some of these growth stocks that have been hit so hard in these past couple of weeks.
John, does Argus have an opinion on how many rate hikes you guys expect in 2022?
We think three in 2022, another two or three in 2023, and then maybe two more in 2024. So the Federal Reserve lifts the federal funds rate back up to around 2%. And then, you know, the powder is at least a little bit dry for the next crisis that comes along. So, looking at a high, modestly rising interest rate environment for the next couple of years. And that doesn't have to be bad for stocks, particularly if the Fed is ahead of that inflation curve and we start to see some of those pricing pressures abate.
We found ourselves pretty much for the last 12 months arguing that the Fed transitory didn't mean 3 weeks or 3 months, that it probably was an inflation cycle that was much longer. But now I kind of find myself maybe on your side of the fence here where, you know, the Federal Reserve is not going to, I believe, really intentionally push really down hard on the brakes and potentially put us into a recession. Not to mention we have an election coming up in November. Are you guys kind of reading the picture the same way? They'll be a little bit more patient?
I do think they will be. And the Fed's focus for many, many months has been more on unemployment than on inflation. And we went into the pandemic with an unemployment rate of 3.5%. It shot up close to 15%. And with the Fed's help, unemployment has come back down below 4%. So in a way, that's a very important victory, right? And it's not like the 1970s when we had high unemployment and high inflation. So the Fed's done a good job with unemployment. And now, you know, the next thing to work on is inflation. And I think it has the tools. And I think compared to previous Federal Reserve boards, Jerome Powell is very transparent. He's, you know, sharing what he thinks is going to happen. A lot of the Fed presidents and governors are speaking as well. So I think the Fed isn't the black box that it used to be anymore. And I think that communication also helps calm the markets. And again, I think we're going to get some of that next week.
So speaking of inflation, Dominic and I talked to a lot of portfolio managers, and some of them are of the belief that inflation will begin to abate, you know, mid-year as some of the supply chain shortages come offline. Others believe that the inflation will be a problem all year. Do you guys have an opinion on that?
It depends on what you call a problem, Michael, right? I guess inflation is not a problem if it's below that 2% level that the Fed has targeted. And even the Fed said they wouldn't worry if it ran 2.3, 2.5. You know, we're probably going to see 3 to 4% inflation, maybe closer to 3% by the end of next year. And that's a problem because it's not 2%, but it certainly is better than the, you know, 4.5, 5% plus core pricing pressures we've seen lately. One of the leading indicators we've been looking at, I think a lot of people are familiar with the Purchasing Managers report, the monthly PMI report. And that's been pretty high. Anything above 50 is good. It's been above 60. There is also a supply chain component to it. Like when the supply chain gets really snarled. And that earlier last year was around 70. But for the past 6 months, that has been coming down. It still is higher than what we'd like to see. But the trend has been for the supply chain problems to start to clear up, at least according to this purchasing manager survey. And I'm optimistic we'll see that play out in some of the inflation numbers, maybe toward the spring or the summer.
But John, you would agree this latest round of COVID threw another monkey wrench into the Fed's plan. I mean, the idea that we have it going around the world again really puts the supply chain, factories operating, every aspect of our economy, at least on a slight pause, if not a complete break. So that could not have helped the situation.
No, it didn't. And, you know, the first time the pandemic hit, there was a, you know, once in a lifetime swing in GDP to minus 30% to plus 30%. When Delta hit, the impact on GDP was about 200 base, maybe 400 basis points from 6% growth to 2% growth. Omicron is definitely going to have an impact probably on the end of this fourth quarter number and early in the first quarter, but I don't think it's going to be 400% or 400 basis points. And to your point earlier, I don't see the economy heading into a recession here with unemployment as low as it is and consumer spending still pretty strong.
John, we're bumping up against a break. When we come back, we're going to ask you to get a little more granular about some of the sectors that you like, some of the sectors that you don't like. So be prepared for that. And we will be right back with John Eade after this quick break.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
When you're thinking about where to park your cash, for over 30 years in the business, I've been a fan of funds like the Labenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund. It's managed for cash and designed so the interest income you receive is free from federal taxes. And who doesn't love paying less taxes?
Mike, generating interest that's free from federal taxes is appealing. But I've been in this business for a long time, and people love the potential for more income on their hard-earned cash.
Sorry, Dom. But the beauty of the fund is paying less taxes on cash.
No, my friend, it's the potential for more income.
Mm-mm. Less taxes.
More income.
Less taxes.
More income.
Less
for
taxes.
Your cash.
More
income. Ask your advisor about the Labenthal Ultra Short Tax-Free Income Fund.
You, less taxes.
Or find out more at dcmadvisors.com.
Well, Dom, one thing I know we agree on, it's not what you earn.
It's what you keep.
Labenthal Ultrashort Tax-Free Income Fund. Symbol LETAX. The tax.
Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by calling 800-441-7031. Please read the prospectus carefully before you invest. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. There is no guarantee that this or any investing strategy will be successful. An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund carefully before investing. The fund is distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC, member FINRA. The fund may invest in municipal securities, the interest on which may be subject to federal alternative minimum tax. After the fund buys a security, the IRS may determine that a bond issued as tax-exempt should in fact be taxable. There is no affiliation between DCM Advisors, LLC, and Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC. DCM Advisors and Ultimus Fund Distributors are not affiliated with Labenthal Financial Services, Inc. or Labenthal Global Advisors, LLC.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live, join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with Dominic Tavella and our special guest this evening, John E., the chairman of Argus Research. John, we talked, you know, we really talked globally about the economy for the first part of the show. Let's get a little more granular now. What sectors do you, let's start with what sectors you don't like right now as we see some of the volatility and some of the uncertainty in the market.
Hey, Michael. So the way that the market is divided, and I'm speaking mostly about the S&P 500, is into 11 different sectors. And we have a process we use to recommend whether our clients should be overweighting the sectors or underweighting the sectors. And the process takes into account economic factors, earnings factors, valuations, and so forth. So the sectors that we have recommended right now as underweight sectors are two of the 11. One is the utilities sector. And historically, the utilities sector has not done well when interest rates rise because people typically buy utilities for the dividend income from the, you know, consistent regulated businesses. And if they can get higher income from a bond yield, which is oftentimes safer than a utility stock, they head over and they sell their utility stocks and buy the fixed income instruments. So we have an underweight on the utilities sector. We also have an underweight on the consumer sector. And that's probably a little bit more nuanced. Here is where we see a sector we're not anticipating very strong growth in consumer staples this year, about a 5% growth rate when we expect the overall market to grow earnings at an 8 to 10% rate. And that's okay if it's not growing much, if the valuations are reasonable. But if we look at the yield on the consumer staples, it is in line with the market yield. The PE ratio is in line with the market PE ratio. So we think that you're probably paying too much when you're buying consumer staple stocks for the earnings that we expect they're going to generate in 2022. Some of our sectors that we're more neutral on include the energy sector. There was a big jump in energy prices in 2021. And the price of barrel of an oil, I think, is at two-year highs now, early in 2022 on some of these inflation concerns. But we see a pretty secular cap on the price of a barrel of oil as the world moves toward a peak oil demand time, whether that's 2035 or 2030. It's out there, and we just don't see oil prices doubling again from where they are like they doubled in 2021. And the consumer discretionary is another sector where we think it's a bit overvalued. That's dominated a lot right now by companies like Tesla or Amazon.com. And while there's pretty good growth, there's also a very low dividend yield and high PE ratios for consumer discretionary. So those are some of the ones that we're either neutral or negative on at this stage of the cycle.
So just a follow-up question, and I was going to shut up and let Dom speak, but how do you determine a company like Amazon is a consumer discretionary company if they sell everything from toilet paper and hand soap? Which is staples?
No, that's a great question, Michael. And in a way, that exposes perhaps, you know, one of the flaws with trying to really invest in sectors or time the sectors. They're a bit arbitrary on how they're defined. And this is the S&P index group that places Amazon.com with its enormous cloud hosting business in consumer discretionary. And this is the same group that took the telecom sector a few years ago, AT&T and Verizon, you know, 5 or 6% dividend yields, and jammed Facebook and Google into that same sector. Those business models aren't aligned. There's nothing similar to those companies whatsoever. However, they're all grouped in communication services. Meanwhile, a sector like technology, which is now almost a third of the S&P 500, includes software companies, semiconductors, hardware companies, and those businesses are on slightly different cycles. And you know, maybe someday they'll be split up into their own sector. So there are some inherent issues with trying to pick sectors that you know, and you point out one of them, that they don't all blend together perfectly.
And, you know, John, it's not one of the questions I really had in mind, but, you know, when we look at placing an ETF in our portfolios, like consumer discretionary, and I just Googled it, I wanted to look at it, and Amazon is its number one holder, Home Depot, Nike. A lot of people buy these things not really knowing what it is that they actually own. And they don't realize, I didn't realize I already invested in that sector. How is, and to Mike's point, how is that particular company being plugged into one of these ETFs and labeled as a could be an energy company or a growth company or a company? If you don't do the homework and dig and see what you actually own, I really want to speculate here, but not too much speculation. A lot of people really don't understand what it is they actually own.
Right. And more of that information is available now. And more people are also moving toward that passive investing where they're, you know, moving their chips on the energy sector in early 2022. And, you know, maybe by the fall, they'll be in healthcare or something. Hard to say. I will say that the sectors that we do like, we have a couple of sectors that we like for secular reasons, and then three that we like for more cyclical reasons. And the secular the sectors that we like are the technology and the healthcare sectors. And these are the industry, these are the crown jewel industries of our country, right? This is where so much of the innovation is, whether it's in new treatments for COVID-19 or new services that can connect us all while we're working from home. Technology and healthcare have the brightest growth prospects. They match up well with the demographic trends in the U.S. So those are sectors that we have as overweights. And we've had technology sector as an overweight for, I'm going to say, 6 or 7 years. And maybe because our director of research, who you know, Jim Kelleher, is also a tech analyst. But it has been a good call, right? And like I said, it's now 30% of the market. So better to get 30% right than, you know, maybe worry about energy, which is 3% of the market. And that had been 10%, and it's been sold off to 3%, you know, over these last 5 or 6 years. Anyway, the cyclical sectors we like, you know, you can probably guess, we've talked about these themes. We like financial services now with a steepening yield curve. We like basic materials, that's with inflation running hot. And then, you know, we talked during the break about this deficit spending that's been going on in D.C. and how that's contributing to inflation. It's also, we also think it's going to contribute to a weakened U.S. dollar over time. And that's going to play well for export companies. And a lot of those are in the industrial sector. So we have 5 sectors we like. 2 of them are more secular ideas, and then 3 of them are more cyclical, you know, where we are right now in the economy and market cycles.
John, one sector that we haven't mentioned at all this evening that Dominic and I get a lot of calls about when interest rates go up, and that's real estate. And I know real estate's a wide net. There's commercial real estate, there's residential real estate, there's hospitals. Could you talk briefly about real estate and where Argus sees real estate heading?
Yes. So real estate had a great year last year. I think it was up 40% when the market was up 27, 28%. I think we've seen some profit taking here early in 2022, and it has been an underperformer so far. It's not a big part of the S&P 500. It's about 3%. Mm-hmm. I think you've got utilities 3%, materials 3%, energy 3%, and real estate 3%. So, you know, it's never going to be a major part of anybody's portfolio. The earnings growth rate, I don't think is really that strong here. this year. There still is a lot of vacancies. People aren't coming back to commercial real estate yet. A lot of retailers are still boarded up. So we like the longer term outlook for real estate, but right now we have it as a market weight. And the parts of real estate where we've been using in our portfolios have been like the cell tower real estate investment trusts, or the real estate investment trusts that are building all of those data centers that are, you know, housing the computers that are supporting the cloud. So as opposed to maybe like a commercial or a commercial real estate company with a lot of towers in New York or San Francisco, it's these other part of real estate that we've been looking at.
John, you mentioned some of our favorite and least favorite sectors. And ironically, you know, healthcare is having a rough year so far this year. So is tech and energy, even on a year-to-date basis. I mean, we have some energy exposure in our portfolios. It's up 16-18% year-to-date. Talk about the importance of harvesting profits and reallocating those dollars to sectors that maybe haven't done as well. Talk about the importance of managing that risk in portfolios and selling high, buying low.
Yeah, that's probably one of the hardest things to do, Dom. It's easy to say, you know, which stocks to buy, but which are the ones to sell? And as portfolio managers, you know, we're looking at that all the time. And sometimes it's selling the winners that you know, maybe the PE ratios have gotten a little bit high, and then rebalancing the portfolio by taking some of those profits and buying some of the maybe a little bit laggards, not laggards where, let's say, the fundamentals have changed for the company and the prospects don't look as strong, but maybe there's been a temporary setback and the investment thesis is still intact. But then at the other end, it's important to know which of your stocks are lagging. And if you do see something that, the business has changed, this doesn't make sense anymore where we are in the environment, you know, that's something to sell too. Don't wait for it to, you know, get back to maybe where you bought it or perhaps a 20% premium. It's better to just take that loss and move into, that next idea.
Mike, you bring this up all the time. What's your sell discipline?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where you're heading with this, right, John? That we often look at winners and we like to own the winners, hold the winners, and maybe even buy more of them and kind of get rid of the losers. But you got to rotate the portfolio as well.
Right. Especially if you're, buying value stocks. And like there was a regional bank I bought a year and a half ago because it had a 5% yield. Well, that yield is now 2.5%. So it's not as enticing as it was anymore. I don't think that price is going to double again. And, that's something I'm looking to move out of my portfolio. I wanted to wait a year, though, right? So I didn't incur a short-term capital gain. Wanted to do it in the longer term, but that's something to think about as well.
Yeah, and just let me expand upon that. The yield was cut in half, not because there was poor performance or the company cut the dividend. The yield was cut in half because you picked a stock that doubled in price.
Right.
Right. That's important for our listeners to know. It's a good problem that you had.
Right.
But if I can, I want to emphasize your point, John. The stock's done well, and most people would go buy more, right? They're buying emotionally. You're looking at it strictly on the fundamentals and going, hey, I've harvested out of this as much as I can or can justify doing so. It's time to take that capital and find another place to make it work for me.
Right. And my portfolio is more tilted toward growth. And so some of the growth stocks that I have in my portfolio have come off in these last few days of heavy selling in NASDAQ and in growth ideas. So I'm inclined to And of course, you know, we have various different compliance procedures we have to follow here at Argus, but, you know, follow our compliance rules and, you know, maybe look to rebalance my portfolio in the wake of the sell-off of the growth stocks.
So, John, we're just about out of time. And I just want to ask you one last question. We've talked on this show when we've talked offline about disruptive technology, how Dom and I, you know, love the concept of disruptive technology. You guys have a portfolio dedicated to it. So we can't take our eye off the ball that disruptive stocks are here to stay. The innovations they're creating literally can change the way we live our lives and the way how long our lives are. So you haven't lost your flavor for that in any shape, way, or form, have you?
No. And we're always reviewing that portfolio. And, you know, it's what happens when there's a sell-off in growth stocks. Some of the leaders in that portfolio are now lagging. But what we are asking is, you know, has something changed for this company? And I'll give you an example. There's a company we own that makes generators. And it's been a high flyer because, you know, the wildfires are going nuts in California. The hurricanes are swamping Texas and Louisiana. And people are buying generators. And that's a trend that, you know, is not going to change. The prices come down because interest rates have gone up. But I don't expect any change to the business for that company. So that's one, you know, we're going to be keeping in and adding to. As we focus on changes and disruption in the economy and in you know, the markets.
John, I'm just going to follow up because Mike is right. We're running out of time. But some of these companies literally have lost 50-60+% of their value. At what point do you go, you know what, it's worth a flyer?
Well, we have a six-point system we use, Dom. So we're going to want to see growth. We're going to want to see financial strength. We're going to want to see a good management team. We're going to see risks managed, a positive outlook for the industry, and a reasonable valuation. So those are the points we're going to look at before, you know, we do some upgrades or take a flyer on stock. We're going to really follow the fundamentals there.
John, Argus Research is a great partner for us. It's a great firm. It's been around for decades, and we always appreciate you making the time for us to come on our show and share your thoughts with our clients and audience.
Thank you, Michael and Dom, for having me on. Hope to come back again soon.
We would love to have you back, John, maybe get an overall yearly for the year market call. So let's see if we can get you on back as soon as possible.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Small businesses are in trouble, and it didn't just start with COVID-19. From the recession several years ago to the revolution of e-commerce giants more recently, small businesses are getting hit hard and need to come back. Tune in to Business Buzz and Business Watch. It's two shows in one, hosted by Frank Hellring. We'll help your small business bounce back with best practices, guest experts, and resources that you can use to strengthen your small business. Listen Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Are you ready to hear from investors and get insight on different asset classes? Join host Troy Eckert for the program Talk with the Texan, Money and Life. Troy works with high net worth investors and is ready to bring you the secrets he's learned in his 35 years of alternative investment experience, along with his guest experts. If you want value, you'll need to listen in live every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to the Labenthal Report. If you're listening to the show live,
Join in on our discussion with questions or comments at 1-866-472-5790. Again, that's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to contact@labenthal.com. Now, back to the Labenthal Report.
All right, I'm Michael Hartzman, back with Dominic Tavella. John was terrific. You know, I say it every week with these guests. They're calm, they're well thought out, they're well reasoned, and they always have a plan and they never panic.
We didn't discuss this before we came back live, but my brain was like, just how calm he was, how disciplined they are in making investment decisions. And I definitely handed him the loaded question about when do you buy some of these speculative stocks? And his answer was, hey, it's all about the numbers, right? And it's all about a process. Every one of them goes through a whole screening. And if they meet the criteria, then they're a buy. If they don't meet the criteria, no, we don't care that the stock has lost 50% of its value. It was justified losing 50%.
Right. Right. You know, and I still can't get my brain around. Look, we talked earlier in the show about the FANG stocks, right? And that's Facebook, which now what's called Meta, something like that. Yeah. Metaverse, whatever. Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. How, when John said that Amazon is a discretionary company, and I'm not debating John Eid and what he knows about Amazon, but how on earth does Amazon get categorized as discretionary when literally millions upon millions of people use it probably multiple times a day?
Well, it's a consumer discretion. The consumer obviously is using them to make a buy that isn't necessarily a must-have, a staple, right? Like soap. So look,
but they are buying soap there too.
We can find the justification. The portfolio managers find the justification why that stock meets the definition. But you and I know they kind of make up the rules as they go, and they will stretch the rules to get some particular company stock to fit the model. And we joked about Tesla being in the same category. I guess it's discretionary whether you buy a Tesla or not, but it's really a portfolio manager kind of making the square peg fit in a round hole. And that's kind of one of the industry's dirty little secrets. It's our job to look and see what it is that we're actually buying. The average consumer out there, the average investor who's buying some of these indices doesn't really know what's inside. The average. Yeah.
Dom, I had a very well-known analyst say to me many years ago that she considers Tesla a media company. And I said, a media company? How is that possible? She said, well, if they're making driverless technology, they have to find a way to keep the passengers entertained. Which, I don't know, sounded like a bit of a reach to me, but
look, you and I, Mike, lived this, and we don't have enough time to reminisce, but in the 90s, where there were mutual funds out there that had 80% of their funds, assets allocated to technology companies, and they were defining them any way they wanted to justify why they should own them, only to get wrecked, you know, when we had the tech bubble burst in 2000. So it's really important to understand what it is you actually own and make sure if it fits your model, great. But if it doesn't, hey, look past the performance and go find something else to put inside your portfolio.
And just to put a bow on tonight and put a bow on, you know, last week's activity and today's activity, first day of the trading week. Yes, the market is weak. Yes, the market is soft, but we're not panicking. We're not predicting doom and gloom. And as John said, you know, it's typical for a year, for any market year, to have, you know, a couple of sell-offs of around 5%, maybe 1 or 2 at 10% is not unusual. So we're not, you know, there's no reason to panic now or to hit the red button on your desk.
And look, let me add on, there is a real benefit to these markets going through a little bit of a pullback. If you're dollar cost averaging your 401k plan, in your TSA plan, if your retirement plan at work, if you have cash on the side and are able to acquire some of these individual stocks or sectors at a 5, 10% discount, there is value to the market going through this roller coaster ride if you're in a position where you can take advantage of it.
Exactly. So we are out of time, my friend. So We'll see you next week.
Have a great evening, everybody, and be safe, please.
Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Labenthal Report. Dominic Tavella and Michael Hartzman will be back for our next program, airing next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a great week.